if you ask people a lot of the time what they're looking for in the year in Eretz Yisrael, so one of the things that they'll say on the list of things people will say, so one of the things is I want to learn how to learn. It's something which you'll hear people say a lot, is cultivating certain skills to be able to learn independently. Usually when people say that, they are referring to one of two things, and often they're referring to both. The first thing that people tend to be referring to is to make sure that they are able to learn independently from the perspective of reading text. That I want to be able to read a Gemara, a Rashi, a Tosfos. I want to be able to read Gemara, Rishonim, and to learn those well. And that's undoubtedly one level when we speak about learning how to learn. What people often mean above and beyond being able to read things inside and people to understand what's going on is sometimes like the next step, which is often a little bit more conceptual, a little bit more lumdish, and that has a lot more to do with setting up sugyas and the like. So I thought it would make sense, because sometimes we have slots like this and sometimes we don't, to have, at least from time to time, discussions or even shiurim about, quote, learning how to learn and the world of Gemara methodology. Try to explain a little bit well some of the pros and some of the cons, and try to articulate, if not today as much, at least certain sort of moves or tricks that can help a person in their learning a little bit. But I want to do so by beginning in the following way. There are, when we speak about, at least for me, there are two particular makoros that influence, I think, what a person's supposed to be doing when they're teaching Torah. And again, there's obviously more makoros, but at least two that I think are somewhat valuable. Rav Hirsch has a comment in his Perush al HaTorah in Parshas Tetzaveh, I believe, commenting on the tzivoy to light a menorah. There's a chiyuv to light a menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, quoting the beginning of Parshas Baloscha also. Rashi quotes the beginning of Parshas Baloscha, a comment of Chazal, that when you light the candles, the way that you should light the candles is shaheves ole me'eleha. Instead of you putting like the candle directly on in order to light it, you should do it in a way where it's kilu, the candle like comes up on its own. It's kilu, the candle, it looks like on some level that it just on its own already lit itself. Rav Hirsch understands or uses this as a metaphor for a person's relationship to Talmud Torah. And Rav Hirsch understands that the primary goal of any Rebbe is essentially to make himself unnecessary. That the goal of being able to teach Torah in a way that eventually the person is no longer dependent on someone else, but shetehei shaheves ola me'eleha, that a person should get to the point where they can learn in many ways independently on their own. The learning how to learn is part of the responsibility of a person sitting in the room. It's also part of the achrayus, the responsibility of the person that's teaching Torah, to make sure it's being given over in a way that a person could be independent in their learning. Rosenzweig is fond of pointing out, many others have this suggestion also, that's even probably the pshat in the first Mishnah in Perkei Avos, where one of the things that we're supposed to do is ve'hemidu talmidim harbe, to have many, many talmidim. The formulation of ve'hemidu, to stand up many talmidim, implies, again, Rosenzweig, but I think he often points out to others before him also have noted, it's almost not just about having lots of talmidim, but creating the kinds of people that are ve'hemidu, that you're standing them up, that they can stand on their own two feet, and that they can be somewhat independent in learning. So in this particular slot over the years, we had the opportunity to speak a little bit about skills and familiarity with different Rishonim, skills in the world of halacha, skills in the world of reading Rishonim, of learning Ramban al Torah. I thought, in general, that the question of how to learn, so obviously it's a complex one. We're going to focus less on text today, less on how to read a particular Rishon or a particular Achron, and a little bit more on the general worldview of learning how to learn. And we'll try to articulate a couple of things, at least in the time that we have. When people speak about Derech Halima, so we know that there are many, many different ways that you could learn. Depending on what your goals are in learning, it's going to radically alter and impact what you are doing every time that you open up a Gemara, every time that you open up a Rishon, try to learn a Sugya, or anything along those lines. If your primary goal, as an example, you're channeling the Gemara Masechet Baba Kama, La Suke Shmaisa Aliba de Hilchasa, if your primary goal is to learn Halacha Lemaisa, so that's going to lead you to learn in a particular style. If that's the worldview, that's how you're going to be learning. So unsurprisingly, any conversation that we have about the right way to learn is going to be, what is the best way for me to learn that will lead me to the halachic conclusion for what do I do halacha, what do I do halacha lemaisa? We know that the Gemara in Horios and Daf Yadala distinguishes between two other sort of questions of Derech Halima. The Gemara refers to people either as a Sinai or an Oker Harim. They're associated either with one who rips up mountains, who's Oker Harim, or one who is, or uproots mountains, or one who is a Sinai,
one who's compared to Harzinim. What's the difference? So Rashi explains there in Maseches Horios that there are two ways to learn. A Sinai is a person who's mastered a massive amount of information. Like the Torah that was given to Harsinai, so you have that. You're the person who has mastered just an amazing amount of Torah, an amazing amount of Torah content. There are also people, like an Okir Harim, is one who is so creative and so original that it's like they're uprooting mountains with their svaras. There are Darkei Halima that care more about Halakha Lamaisa or less. There are Darkei Halima that value the acquisition of information more. And there are Darkei Halima which value human creativity and the original svara a little bit more. Depending on what your goal is in Derech Halima, that will impact two questions. Number one, it will impact what mikoros you look at. Obviously, if you're learning halacha lemaisa, so you're going to need to learn sources that focus on how we paskin and even like contemporary psak. You're going to get tshuvas that are written in contemporary times to know what to do halacha lemaisa. If, however, you're interested in acquiring a lot of information, if that's your primary goal, so you're going to look at a lot of different svarim potentially to make sure that you're clear. It could be a lot of different gemaras and tosvos, could be a lot of different rishonim on any sugya, could be just a whole host of rishonim and achronim, but if you're looking for a lot, that's that. If it's more creativity or a certain style, so maybe I'll look at other sources. We know that there are darkei lima that emphasize more understanding rishonim, those that quote achronim more, those that focus more exclusively on gemara, rashi, and tosvos. If your goal is to understand the text in front of you, maybe you'll be more limited in terms of the range of mekoros that you see. Not only in different Darkei Halima are we talking about the sources that you will see, but an additional question which will often come up relates to what you do with the mekoros that you're learning. So everyone's starting with Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos. But part of the question is as follows. When you learn a Tosfos, so by looking at Tosfos, primarily Tosfos is there to help me put the sugya in the context of all shas. Primarily, Tosfos there because Tosfos are also poskim. And in the world of halacha, I have to know what are the conclusions of Tosfos. Tosfos is there. My primary goal is to understand the Daf Gemara. It's to understand all the different points that Tosfos happens to raise. If I'm creative or a certain kind of analysis, I want to understand, and this is true probably for any Derech Leman on some level, but why does Tosfos say what they say? What else could they have said and why did they say that? What exactly was motivating them to go in this direction? What are the underlying yesodos that led them to those conclusions? So different Darkei Halima will be doing different things. What we're going to focus on a little bit for now, because we've spoken to other kinds of Darkei Halima, is a particular style of learning, which is, I think, most common in the standard yeshiva world nowadays. There's a wide range of how different people learn. But we're going to speak a little bit about, in particular, those who focus more on learning sugyas. Learning sugyas as a whole. Instead of just the Daf Gemara in front of us, many learn like that. We're also got some skills in sugyas and some skills in a world which is more inclined to focus a bit more on what we call sometimes, what is referred to sometimes, as like primary questions. Instead of a Derech Halima, which is there to grapple with kashas that are raised, wow, a big kasha from the Pnei Yoshua, my goal is to answer the Pnei Yoshua's kasha. But a Derech Halima which focuses more on, well, again, what someone would refer to as primary questions. Why do we say Yachloku? When do we say Yachloku? Questions that are more, in a certain sense, simple and basic. But nevertheless, those are questions that are able to sort of guide us in a little bit more of a style of learning. So if you're learning about Shlichas, so you want to know what's the source for Shlichas, how does Shlichas work, what's the relationship between the Shliach and the Mishaleach, when is there shlichas, when is there no shlichas, and the focus in that kind of a style. What's the mila to learning about how to learn? Why not just learn? Why not just learn? Because on one level, you can't just learn. You're always going to be making choices. If v'hamidu tamidim harbe, v'shalheves olam e'ilaha, every time that you learn independently, you will always have to make a choice. What are the choices that you will make? You'll make choices for what mikoros you want to look at. You're going to make choices for what you want to do with those mikoros that you're looking at. Those are the choices that we're always going to have to be making. So part of a question in terms of clarifying certain things is to be able, one of the benefits of clarifying a particular Derech Halima is to know what you're going to be doing while you learn, what you're going to be doing as you learn. That's at least one issue at play. There is an additional element of which I think is critical is as follows. One of the things which you'll find a lot of svarim about Derech Halima is that there's a lot of repetition. a lot of repetition, not about content per se, but a lot of repetition about patterns. Patterns. There are certain kinds of questions that come up all the time, all the time. So I'll give you an example of a pattern. And if we're aware of this question, it can be very helpful. You have something which you know exists. And there's an addition on to that which you know exists. There's an addition on that which you know exists. So the question which will often come up is, that which we add on to that which already exists, is it exactly like the thing that already exists? Or is it somehow separate and somewhat different? I'll give you an example of that question. The Gemara teaches us in Masechet Rosh Hashanah and Daf Tes, it's a din called Tosefa Shabbos. There's something called Shabbos. Shabbos starts, Shkia. Shabbos ends, you know, the next day. There's something called Shabbos. But there's also a halacha called Tosefa Shabbos. What's the halacha of Tosefa Shabbos? I have to start Shabbos earlier than that. How long that is a discussion. And we've shown him a discussion in postgame. But I have to add on to Shabbos a little bit. So I know there's a question which is Tosefa Shabbos, is the extra the same as Shabbos itself? I've added on and made this. It really is Shabbos. Or is it extra, but not the exact same thing as Shabbos? Are there differences between what I can do in Tosefes and what Shabbos exactly is? Can I, as an example, have my Shabbos meal during Tosefes? Or is that not appropriate? It's not the same thing as Shabbos. To what extent is it the same thing or not? It's a question that comes up in Tosefes Shabbos. When you add something on to something which already exists, so does it take a new character or is it the same as what's already there? Once you know that question exists, so when someone points out to you, by the way, when you see an extension, here's a question which comes up. So what can happen sometimes is that suddenly you may know a chakira which exists in many, many other sugyas. What are other sugyas where this comes up? So I'll give you a couple. Two of them are almost obvious, but one is Tosefes Shviyas. The halacha is in a Shemitah year, we start Mishnayis Masechta Shviyas. We start Shemitah a little bit before, and we end a little bit after. So a similar kind of a question may emerge. That time, for Tosefes Shviyas, it's like Shviyas itself. It has all the same dinim, all the same character. Or rather, Tosefes Shviyas is separate. Tosefes Shviyas is a little bit different. When you add on, what character does it take? Now, you could say something about Tosefes Ksuva, but then you'll think we just give us with examples of that start with the word Tosefes. But I'll give you another one, a Gemara in Brachos. The first three brachas of benching are Doraisa. The first three brachas of benching are Doraisa. Adonai Sakol, Allah Ratzvel Mazon, B'nei Yushalayim. That's why we say Namein after B'nei Yushalayim. The Rabbanan added on to benching Hatova HaMeitiv. Hatova HaMeitiv. They added on to benching Hatova HaMeitiv. You'll see a similar question. You'll see a similar question. What would the question be? When the Rabbanan added on Hatova HaMeitiv, did they make that to be part of benching itself that has all the same dinim as benching? Or did they? It's a separate idea. What would be like a nafkamina? I'll give you a nafkamina. Normally, if you're not sure if you benched, so benching is a din d'oraisa, v'chalta v'sevata v'rachta. What's the din if you're not sure if you benched? We say, safik d'oraisa, l'chomran, you should bench again. When you bench again, do you only bench with the first three brachas or also with the fourth bracha, which is derabanan? Well, maybe that depends on it. If what Chazal did was they made it part and parcel of benching, so maybe once I go back over the first, he has to go back over the fourth also. If, however, it's a separate idea, it wasn't really part of it, the Amen after B'nai Yerushalayim is there to tell me this is separate. So maybe if you're not sure if you benched and now you have to go back, you should only go back on the first three brachas because those are d'oraisa and the other one is derabanan. That's machlokas amongst Rishonim. But the same question sometimes can come up again and again. It's one of the milas of a certain methodology of being aware that sometimes then you become aware of certain patterns. I'll give you another example for whatever it's worth. This comes up all the time. Sometimes we're not sure what to do. In halacha, we're not sure what to do. So we have a variety of mechanisms that try and clarify for us what exactly we should be doing, what we should be doing. Those mechanisms are rove, chazaka. There's a million different kinds of chazakas, really a million, no, but a bunch, kinds of chazakas. There is edim, migo can help clarify things sometimes. There are a lot of things that, svexfeka, a lot of things that help clarify if we're not sure what to do. One of the questions which may come up is, it comes up, let's say Rav Elchanan has this question, in Kovach Yirin Ba'Basra and Simen Ayin Ches. It's a question about, let's say, Rov or Chazaka. Does Rov eradicate the Safek? It's Mivarer. We thought we had a question, but Rov clarifies for us what happened. There's really no doubt at all. Rov says, this piece of meat comes from the kosher store. Or is it more of what you refer to often as a Hanhaga? It doesn't clarify the doubt. It tells us what we do when there is a doubt. So it's not that we know for sure what happened. I don't know if it means kosher, but it's what do I do when there is a doubt? And there are machloks that will emerge and discussions that will come up with that question of Bira or Hanhaga. Once you know that question exists when it comes to Rove, so you will often be sensitive to that pattern whenever we clarify something. Hamotze Mechavera Olav Haraya. We've been Mivarer that you're the owner, or when we're not sure, we leave it by you. Now, we spoke about Rav Elchanan, Yeshua, and others. That question sometimes comes up. It'll come up with Svek Sveika. It'll come up in a host of things. It's that we don't know what to do, and therefore, or we are sure, and this is therefore why you do it. Questions repeat themselves a lot. So what we'll do sometimes, hopefully, if we do this urine from time to time, is to speak a little bit about, to make people more independent, is to be able to highlight certain patterns which exist. We do this sometimes on the side of the board. You know, the same question which exists about Ikar V'Tafel in a very, very different way may exist about Eina Mesayeya. That the same kinds of patterns can exist. It makes us more sensitive to what's going on. Migo may have an element of, is it Mivarer, what really happened, or is it something else? A similar questions that are going to emerge. Nevertheless, and here's what's an important thing to know, we don't have that much more time, introducing certain ideas. There are tremendous, the advantages are that it allows this person to be much more independent. I can be more independent in my own learning. I know which questions to ask. It leads me in a certain direction. The advantages are that when I look at Mekoros, you know, I'll know what to do. And also, this is a very helpful way sometimes to set up a sugya. One of the things I know I struggle with, and I imagine when you start learning or if you are learning a little bit more of Ian on your own, one of the real struggles that you have, this is like a great example. Mesifta Gemaras are unbelievable. They give you like a million things. A lot of these resources give you a million Mekoros. You look on your own and you come across a lot of Rishonim, a lot of Achronim. One of the questions which comes up is like, so how do I organize this? How do I take these Mekoros and not be a list of seven different Rishonim, but you put something together? Sometimes being able to have a primary question or two can help you put stuff together in a certain way. What's the downside of some tricks and some tools? What's the downside? So there are a couple possible downsides. One downside is you may really be wrong in your question. I'm used to a certain pattern. I'll give you an example. This thing about, I love this. You ever hear anyone talk about like chaf hadimyons? You know, this is kiddis. Hodas valdin kimeya eidin dami. So what's a question that people ask sometimes? Hodas valdin, is it the same as eidim or is it just like Adem? It's Kimeya Adem Dami, Hodas Baldin's like the same status as Adem. If I admit I owe you $200, it's really like Adem said I owe you $200, or just kidding? It's just like it a little bit. And you'll know that question that comes up all the time, that the, you know, these Chaf HaDimyon questions. This is like this. It's really or not all the way like that. The problem is sometimes you can ask that question in absolutely ridiculous ways. And sometimes the pattern which you expect to find may not actually be there. What's an example? The Gemara Maseches Shabbos tells us, if you get angry, it's ki'ilu you're oved avodah zara. Does it mean it's like mamish like you're oved avodah zara? Or is it just like you're oved avodah zara? So I think we can all intuit that it's not like you're actually an idol worshiper. On the list of the Gimel Chamuros, Yehar Vayavor, so I have Ritzicha, Shvichas Damim, and Gilei Arayos, that when we say that getting angry is like Avodah Zarah, it's not mamish like Avodah Zarah. So you have to know the limits of when something applies and when something doesn't apply. Of course, he wants to think about, that's why Torah knowledge is important. We're talking about any sugya, the more you know, the more you will know like what questions can really be asked and what's significant and what's not significant. If you play tricks too much, every Chaf HaDimyon is a certain question, every Tosefes is a certain question, every sort of like, every time, it's important to learn enough and to be familiar enough to be able to figure out what questions exist and what questions don't exist. Methodology are tools that you could learn, But the more knowledgeable we are, the more we'll know what to do with them. I think Rav Tversky once gave an example of this general phenomenon, which is an awesome example. Gematrias often make people smile. You have a certain kind of personality, it makes you very upset for some reason. But gematrias are a tool. Chazal are into it. It's okay. Is it like the basis of all of Torah? No, but gematrias, they're very nice. Parpaus lachachma, they're very, very nice. You go online, they have these like websites, I think. If you figure out that something is gematria 74, and you want to say like Vort, you like gematria. So you go online and you go on that. There's like a website, I think, that tells you, is there, you would know this. Website tells you for 74, what are all the gematrias of 74? The fact that two things have the same gematria is not necessarily so significant. It could theoretically be random. The tool of gematria is a tool. To know how to use that tool requires a degree of knowledge. So if two things that are very similar and you're aware of a link and they have the same gematria, so that may be a very significant or telling gematria. But a gematria that two things that have no gematria at all, you know, it's like the gematria of mango zero and the gematria of bad, let's say have the same gematria, so obviously that's a meaningless gematria. It's a meaningless gematria because it can't be that those two things are connected. It must be you're missing something. And sometimes it's important to pay attention when we're talking about particular skills or particular tools. So the goal sometimes in learning, which we normally do just as part of Shir itself, part of Shir itself is to make us aware of certain skills or tools, though we tend to do a little bit less of some of these conceptual tools, these elements of them. But tools, so a tool like breaking down assumptions that I think is always valuable. A tool like, you know, how to analyze a machlokas, that's always valuable. But the substance of what you do with that tool is where Torah knowledge comes in, and where the more expertise you have, the better you know how to use that tool as well as possible. It's like anything in this world. It's like Rav Shulman from YU, I think, once gave the example. You can know certain abstract tools, but they may do very little for you. Let's say if you know in chess, you know the underlying yesod is like you want to control the middle of the board. That's a good thing if you control the middle of the board. So the tool is like try to like do certain things to control the middle of the board. So that may be sore point, I think. Yeah. That may be you dominated him in the middle of the board. Is that what happened? Or it was in so many different levels that you dominated him that it's hard to break down just the middle. But when that's happening, so it's one thing to say that, but it requires real expertise to then be able to do that well and know how to do that in a meaningful way. And Lahavdil, it's true in learning also. So a lot of what we talk about, this is what we do when we talk about breaking down assumptions, is like, okay, Tosfos had a question. And there's three assumptions in Tosfos' question. So it's important to identify assumptions. But the more you know, the more you'll be able to say, that's an assumption which you probably can't question. And that's an assumption which you probably can question. So speak a little bit about the pros of it is to be aware of certain patterns. You'll be sensitive to certain things. You'll know what to do as far as which makoros you're more likely to look at. You'll know what to do as far as organizing certain sugyas and getting primary questions. But the danger is you can sometimes be very bad at it. And sometimes questions you think should be questions really aren't. And sometimes that can sort of like challenge things. And sometimes one of the critiques, which Rosenzweig points out, which others point out also, is let's say you make up a question because of a different sugya. It's not a real question here. So all you're doing is looking through Rishonim, try to find someone that says the side that you want to exist. I want someone to say, Kol HaKoeis, it's mamish like an idol worshiper. So you look for a million Rishonim to find some line taken out of context. Oh, I think he said you're really an idol worshiper. And it's important to sort of be honest enough with the Rishonim, sort of speak their language, be able to take things as well as possible. At least a little bit of an introduction, something which we'll speak about maybe from time to time, the world of Derech HaLimud, but at least a little bit of an overview and introduction.